sensed the last sensation I had before I blacked out. The thick smell of asphalt. And the first thing I saw when I woke up was her face. She said she'd fix my bike. Free. No strings attached. I should have known then that things are never that simple.
This fades out. We are listening to 65 Days of Static and an awesome track called Asphalt and Trouble from 2006, from a 7-inch that came out after their One Time for All Time album. And at the end of this month, Birds Road Records in Australia are re-releasing this as a deluxe album and digital. This track will be a bonus track on the album, so you'll be able to have it on CD or whatever format you like. And now it's time to have a chat to two of the members of this band. I've got Paul and Joe on the line. You can hear me, can't you?
Hi. Hello.
Hey. Which of you is Paul and which is Joe?
I am Paul.
And I'm Joe.
Excellent. We will try and remember that. I'm Peter Hollow, and thanks for joining me. As Paul would remember, I've been a fan of you guys for a very long time, so it's really exciting to be having you in Australia at the end of this year.
Yeah, it was nice to finally talk to you. I mean, we've been emailing for about, well, is it 10 years ago or something, the first one, I think?
Just maybe about. The first EP was 2003, and we're in 2012 now. So, yeah, getting on to, it's certainly been at least 9 years. It's a little sad that my CD was skipping. I was going to play a track from that that release, but after we've had a chat, I'll find that on my hard drive and I'll play something from way back then. So I hope you don't mind if this is possibly a slightly different interview from normal, but I'd quite like to actually talk about old times, since this is firstly the first time I've had a chat to you, and also it's sort of the, in the event that we're having all of your old material re-released for the Australian market now, which is kind of exciting. So going back to those old days, both of you have been 65 guys since the beginning. I presume that you actually even got together a year or two before that first EP came out. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we played our first show in 2001. So
right,
the anniversary of Kurt Cobain's death, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What date's that? 5th of April.
5th of April. 2001. So we were very excited about that as 19-year-olds.
Right.
Or 21-year-olds.
Just about teens. Okay. And so that kind of answers one of my questions, which is that you have definitely been a live band since the very beginning and a band. So I'm kind of interested, you know, obviously since the very first release, the talk about 65 was how you kind of crossed over between electronica and live post rock or whatever we meant to call it. So is that been pretty much what you were from the start?
Yeah, that was one of the primary things. I was making just music on all laptops and couldn't play the guitar. And Joe had a guitar and loads of crazy effects pedals. I guess we're both listening to weird guitar music and weird electronic music. Mm. But the difference was the live shows, the guitar bands were always really exciting, and the guys behind laptops, even though their music might have been exciting, it was really boring to look at because it was just dudes behind laptops. Yep. So one of the main reasons to we started playing live so fast was we wanted to somehow work out how to do the electronics. Yes. in the live thing.
Yeah, right. Cool. And did you have a live drummer from the start?
No, not immediately. Mm. But those really early years were they were kind of vital to the band, but we didn't really start writing music that we were satisfied with until Rob joined on drums, right. Which was in 2002 or 2003.
Yeah, he's on Stumble, but he's only on as like a sample drum loop because we did it ourselves, so we couldn't afford a recording studio and we didn't know how to record drums very, very well.
Yeah.
So we kind of turned him into some drum loops.
Stumble was like this kind of attempt to sum up, I suppose, what we'd been doing really in bedrooms and cellars and stuff before we moved on, because we knew we were writing The Fall of Math and that we would, you know, that was going to, well, we didn't really know how how it would be received, but we knew that would take us on to doing something new. So Stumble was just kind of a way of cataloguing early stuff, really.
Right. And so there's a, sorry, I'm also talking to my microphone. There's a track on there called Ophelia Remix, and there's sort of the titles all have this sort of in crowd feel, in a way. It's sort of like, oh, there's something going on here, and we're not sure what it is, but it sounds like there's obviously some kind of cool thing with a bit of a history to it. And then I guess that continued with some pretty unofficial releases, which Paul sent me copies of over the years as well, which are probably legendary in 65 Days of Fandom, the sort of unreleased and unreleasable things. So this was also kind of just you guys playing around on laptops and doing mashups and having fun.
Yeah, because that was the sort of time where it just became affordable for just people like us to have the kind of laptops or computers that were actually good enough to start doing, you know, digital audio processing and pulling things to pieces and just about getting broadband in your house so you could download MP3s and kind of just smash all of this stuff together. It was really, it didn't feel like any kind of movement or anything, but it was just loads of and it's something that we always kind of kept doing in between.
Yeah,
right. You write our own music,
And in remixing other bands as well, I guess, over the the course of time. And there are some really great remixes. I discovered youth movies through your remix, in fact.
Wow.
And loved them for their career until they stopped. Are you still actually doing that kind of stuff? Other than remixing one extremely big band that you toured the States with a few years ago.
We do less remixing than we used to do.
Go on. We remixed loads of people over the years. If you actually cast your mind back, we've forgotten that we've done lots of it.
Yeah.
We remixed Alkaline Trio once, which was quite bizarre, because I don't know how they'd heard of us, and they obviously thought that would make them seem cool.
Of course it does.
We didn't really realize we were cool until all these bands.
Yeah.
You know. Or we knew that remixing Alkaline Trio would make us seem less cool, but we did it anyway.
Oh, I don't know about that. What about touring with The Cure then? I believe there's a story behind that you were, that it was going to happen and then it didn't happen and then it did happen later or something. This is old news too for you now, I guess, but it's sort of worth talking about.
We were doing some warm-up shows for Destruction of Small Ideas, and we played Brighton, and after the show Robert Smith was literally just in our dressing room waiting and said hello and said that we should tour sometime, which was probably one of the unlikeliest things that's ever happened to us. So we said yeah, and then we were about to, it was like a European tour. No, it was an American tour. And literally about a week before we were due to leave, they cancelled, they postponed the entire tour because they hadn't finished any record. There was this big gap in our, autumn 2007, which is when we ended up doing that Dance Parties EP for something to do, really, because we knew we couldn't start a new record proper. But because it was postponed, they kindly asked because it got postponed to, the springtime, and at the start of the year, they were doing a tour of Europe. So they asked if we wanted to do that as well and then go on to America. Mm. So it ended up becoming,
pretty lengthy.
A few months of touring with them.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, that would have been a amazing opportunity and to kind of grow your audience via The Cure and to, have people in the US discover you and everything.
Yeah, I mean, the size of the venue is fairly daunting to begin with, but it gave us a really great kind of ability to kind of practice projecting the music onto that size venue. And the really good thing about America was we were playing kind of bars and clubs on our days off, because The Cure, they played every other night, but we couldn't really handle that kind of downtime, so we just played lots of shows, and we were playing Madison Square Garden one night and then the Mercury Lounge in the Village the next night, which is 200 capacity. So it was just great to kind of see how the music worked in different environments, and I think it's left us with that kind of, in terms of playing live, the idea that you just kind of treat everything the same and bring the same kind of energy to whatever the size of it.
I think it helped with our writing as well, because watching them every night play for 3 hours, and they've just written all these amazing pop songs are, as experimental or noisy or moving as and any other band. They've written some incredible songs, and seeing that innovation done in such an accessible way. So something we've actually, although we've always been noisy and strange, we've always aspired to to be kind of media or at least accessible with that music.
Sure. But you've always been instrumental, essentially, with the occasional guest vocals and
yeah.
Are you continuing with that sort of these days? This is jumping to a question I was going to ask later, but in other words, since We Were Exploding Anyway was a couple of years ago, and had Robert on guest vocals, but it's been a couple of years since a real 65 album. So are you still, are you working on new stuff now?
Yes, very much so. We're hopefully in the kind of last third of writing a new record. We were in the studio last week demoing lots of things, and yeah, it's really hard to say what it's going to be like. We're quite kind of stuck in, kind of just lost in the middle of quite a lot of music at the moment, and it's only just becoming clear what it's going to sound like. It's confusing. It's very noisy.
That's interesting. And it sort of brings me to something I always love asking bands a little bit about the sort of their sort of process. Starting with, I suppose, is the lineup pretty much what it always has been? Has it changed very much? And then just in terms of that, are you very democratic as a band? And how do you kind of go about jamming and then creating and, you know, finishing pieces?
It's more of a benign fascism, I think.
Yep. and which of you are the dictators in that case?
Definitely Paul.
Yeah.
I'm one of the kind of downtrodden citizens of the band.
Yeah, naturally.
Did you say lineup?
Yeah. So the two of you have obviously, you know, been core members, but is it the same people pretty much?
Yeah, it's Cy plays bass and Rob plays the drums, and that's really been 65 days since the fall of Math, really, since just after the fall of Math when Cy joined.
Right.
Well, he joined before it was released, and before we toured it, the bass player who played, didn't really feel like 65 started until it was the four of us, and it's been the four of us ever since.
Cool.
So yeah, we are quite. I don't think that will change.
Yeah.
As far as writing goes, we don't know
what we're doing. But that's we do know what we're doing, but we don't have any kind of preconceived notions of what an album is going to sound like.
I don't think we're like normal bands. Like, we were in a studio a couple of days ago, and we had a bad couple of days, and then we had a good couple of days, because instead of trying to just really quickly record a song whilst we were in the studio, because every second counts in there, we just sort of played with the song and tried different instrumentation and chopped it and did the kind of thing that we do in our rehearsal room in a kind of scrappy way where it's hard to hear everything because it's so loud. We did that in our studio with all of the thing, and luxury that we can't really afford to have most of the time, so it does sometimes feel like we're writing in the dark until to the studio to actually make the record, which keeps us on our toes, I guess, but it also makes the whole thing a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. There is a not a tension as such, but a kind of juxtaposition in the band between what sounds like the sort of electronica sort of constructed in the studio thing and what sounds like the band rocking out as you would on stage. So I imagine that kind of is represented in the way you put your albums together as well.
Yeah, I mean, we always keep one. It's always a battle between not getting too carried away with the electronics or arrangement, you know, that we can't imagine how to then replicate live.
Yeah,
we made that mistake when we recorded Destruction on a few songs, because we deliberately approached that like a studio record, and ended up finding half of it almost impossible to play live in any way that satisfied us. And with Exploding, we deliberately made sure that everything could be played live from start to finish.
Yeah.
But then there is a danger of missing opportunities if you get too far stuck into that mindset. It's about sort of balancing.
Yeah.
Well, with electronics, you can literally do whatever you can imagine these days. It's no how far to take that. Really.
Live. Speaking of live, a few years ago you released a live album. Was that part of the sort of the Cure touring? Is it recorded during that? It was called yes. Escape from New York. Yes. And I actually want to ask about that, because John Carpenter, the sort of legendary filmmaker, sort of genre filmmaker, who was responsible for Escape from New York, among other things, appears to have been a huge figure in your formative years, perhaps, and I believe lent you the name of the band, among other things. And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that, and also talk about, speaking of sci-fi movies, the sort of alternate soundtrack you made to the Silent Running movie, also a year or two ago.
Well, I guess John Carpenter's soundtracks, especially, his early movies and the soundtracks that he wrote for them have been incredibly influential. All electronic music, it seems. I mean, sure. It's really incredible stuff. And when we were doing our sort of remixes in the early days, we did do a Solemn Precinct 13 cut-up, which was very, very well received. His kind of clean, synthesized noises and minimal.
It's kind of becoming more important to us again.
Yeah.
Like the cleanness of it.
Yeah, there's a timelessness to it. So it's not like I don't know. It's like all these days, the sort of step sequenced arpeggiated bass lines that he kind of. I mean, I know he's not the only person to have done such a thing, but for all of us, he really sort of messed up.
For sure.
Sci-fi in general has been, it's one of those genres that, is kind of, can often be overlooked because it's not as heavyweight as classic literature or something, but actually you can do incredible things with science fiction, and it doesn't always take itself too seriously.
I think the other thing is, it's funny because we're doing a few interviews with Australian journalists at the moment, obviously, because we're coming over, and a lot of the questions that we've been asked are about sci-fi and films in general. So because our work's being released there all in one go, it's really, when you look at it like that, you can kind of see the clear influences in film and stuff. And we hadn't really thought about that because we don't really look at it that way. So it's been really interesting to kind of think about actually how much film and sci-fi has kind of informed what we do. I think a lot of it's got to do with being instrumental, like
sci-fi's
full kind of counterpoint, usually.
Oh, sorry, we're finding this line's a little bit glitchy, and I might just ask you to backtrack just a half a sentence. or something. But yeah, so you're talking about the music and the instrumental nature and how that's...
And just the film is very important, I think, probably to us subconsciously when making music, and particularly a lot of the kind of images from sci-fi that you kind of carry with you after the fact. It is quite prevalent in the 65 back catalogue, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, apart from the obvious, you know, samples here and there, and Asphalt and Trouble, I looked it up once, but I can't remember anymore where that little spoken bit came from. But yeah, I mean, I feel that the sort of cyberpunk, in a sense, just is sort of redolent of the kind of combination of live and electronic that kind of is what you do as well. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, and it's quite interesting for Australians to just be hearing all of your stuff all in one go. It's sort of out of time, and
yes, exactly. It must be a completely different way of kind of coming across it, because people who are in over here who have been listening to our music have heard it chronologically,
yeah,
and over a great period of time, really, where we've kind of discovered things musically. I can't imagine what it's like listening to Destruction before All of Math, or you know, how records sound without the knowledge of the other records, and that asks all sorts of questions about albums and, you know, what they're for and how you listen to things. I mean, music is, I mean, when we go to Russia, because no one releases records in Russia, I imagine our music is an alphabetical order, an unpacked zip file of kind of illegal MP3s, and that's really a lot of people listen to music in that way now. So you don't listen to the Beatles starting with, you know, Abbey Road and then Sgt. Pepper's or whatever order it is. You listen to like all the Beatles songs that start with A, and then all the songs that start with B, and it's a completely different way of coming a band's music, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, definitely. Even though I personally have kind of followed you chronologically, so yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, but it's also really just exciting that all of your music is coming out here, and that lots of people here will get to hear it. So it's really also exciting that we'll get to see you live at the end of the year. And although I broadcast mainly to Australia, mainly to Sydney, in terms of radio airwaves, this is streamed all over the world, and I know there's people in the rest of the country. So I'll just let people know that Sunday the 30th of December is, I think, the first date, and that's at the Pete's Ridge Festival, just outside of Sydney. I'm kind of excited by the coincidence that you're playing on my birthday in Sydney. So I'll go and have my birthday party for you on the 2nd of January at the Hi-Fi. And then you're in Brisbane on the 3rd of January at the Hi-Fi, the Corner Hotel, which is a lovely venue in Melbourne, on the 4th, and on the 5th of January in Perth, at the Bakery, way across at the other end of the country. So this is going to be your kind of touring, pretty much a gig every night in a different city, and pretty much insane. Do you think? Do you think that we'll be hearing new material, and are you going to try and play some of the old stuff that Australian audiences haven't heard as well? What sort of stuff do you think we'll get to hear?
Yeah, we're discussing it at the moment to work out what's best, because, well, obviously we'd love to play new material, but we'd also like to play a lot of the old stuff that we perhaps don't play so often anymore, because we know it's, you know, the first time we're finally going over there, and there's hopefully going to be a few people who have been waiting for a long time for certain songs.
Exactly.
And because all of our records are new records, it's we don't have time to play everything for everything. So
yeah, I'm sure that must.
I don't know. It's a good question. We haven't worked out what the best thing to do yet is.
Sure. You know, because everything is new to us, I'm sure that the audiences are just going to be happy with whatever you play. I'm certainly really excited. I'm going to be there. Now I think I'm going to play a couple of different tracks. I am going to play something from the soundtrack you did to Silent Running. And we'll see what else.
Cool.
There's so much more that I could ask you, but I think we've pretty much run out of time. So thanks heaps for the conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few months.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Peter. See you in Sydney.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. This is now the track that I tried to play before the interview started, and this is going to work this time. This is DNL Mashup from the Stumble Stop Repeat EP from back in 2003, which, as we were hearing, is a sort of material from the very earliest days of Paul and Joe getting together. So let's enjoy that. Now you're on Utility Fog with Peter Hollow on Sydney's FBI Radio. We'll be right back. last year, 65 Days of Static, or probably late 2010, at least 65 Days of Static, put together an Indiegogo fundraiser, which is a bit like a Kickstarter, essentially the same thing, in order to release a soundtrack that they did, an alternate soundtrack to a sci-fi movie from the early 1970s called Silent Running, which is all about global warming and I guess kind of all your kind of usual action stuff and space stuff from science fiction of the time, it was a big labor of love for them, and all the fans were, who obviously most of whom didn't get to see them do this live, were really keen to hear it, and it was a resounding success, and the soundtrack was released on vinyl and digital. We had a track from it called Broken Ship Roost there, which is one of the most sort of 65 song like things. It's all very, very much of a piece with their usual work, but some of it sounds a bit more perhaps like movie cues and things. Yeah, that's a really great track, and I guess that's one of the most recent things we can hear from them, because that was released more recently than their We Were Exploding Anywhere album or the Heavy Sky EP, both of which are now available from Birds Road Collective in Australia, as part of the re-released deluxe editions of their albums, which are coming out one by one, but pretty quickly. Before that, we heard DNL Mashup from their first EP, the Stumble Stop Repeat EP from 2003, which collected material that probably was written by them in 2001 and 2, when they were kind of getting their act together and working out how they were going to be a live band and an electronic band at the same time. I had a long chat to Paul and Joe, who sort of started the band together way back then. We will get to see them in Australia for the first time at Pete's Ridge Festival at the end of this year, and then in Sydney on the 2nd of January, and then on for the rest of that week in various other Australian cities. I thought it was kind of unfair to just finish with a couple of tracks from them, although I do like to play obscure tracks. So I'm going to play a couple more. I mentioned in the interview that they put out a couple of pretty much CDR releases called Unreleased/Unreleasable, which were tracks which the unreleasable refers to the fact that they did a lot of mashups of, obviously illegally sampled music, and we're going to hear a bit of that soon. They also did lots of remixes for people and had remixes made, some of which made it onto those releases as well. When we were talking about how they were going to tour with The Cure, and then the whole tour got cancelled at the last minute, and they did get to play with The Cure a year later, but they recorded an EP after their Destruction of Small Ideas album, which came out in 2008, and is now available as bonus tracks on the Birds Road re-release of that album, so you can get this very soon. So after a really short fun mashup track from their second unreleased unreleasable volume, we're going to hear a track called Goodbye 2007 from an EP with the awesome name The Distant and Mechanized Glow of Eastern European Dance Parties. So we're going to hear a couple more tracks from 65 Days of Static, and then after that I'm going to go on to play a lovely artist also from the north of England called E.L. Heath coming up soon. You're with Peter Hollow on FBI.
It feels like something's heating up. Can I leave with you?
And ladies,
I don't know what I'm thinking about. Really leaving with you.
Feels good, don't it? Come on.
It feels like something's heating up. Can I leave? Can I leave with you?
Ladies,
I don't know what I'm thinking about. Really leaving with you.
Feels good, don't it? Come on.
It feels like something's heating up. Can I leave? Can I leave? Can I leave?
like something's heating up. It feels like something's heating up. It feels like something's heating up. Can I leave with you?